Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh, 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 no. The Empowerment Hour. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, coming to you live as ever. And because it's the best way and only way to do a Saturday. Talking about stuff that impacts African American community. So let's get started. Education. Versus indoctrination, part four. I got it going on, baby. Oh, yeah. There's no better love. No better love than for self and kind. There's no better love. Welcome to the show today. It's the Empowerment Network. Once again, it's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. And it is your main man, Marvin Rome, coming to you live. We'd like to thank you for joining us today. Our conversation is going to be, again, part four of Education versus Indoctrination. What are we going to do? What are we going to do with the education and indoctrination? But first, as always, let's talk about the NAAEA. It's the National African American Empowerment Association. And I would like to urge you to focus on what our mission is. And that mission is to educate, inspire, motivate, and empower the African American community. That's right, that means you and your family, your relatives, your people, your friends, to develop services and programs that motivate, empower, and inspire our community to become the best that it can be. Whose job is that? It's ours. It's our job to do the work of working on ourselves, to develop and create institutions that define our own reality, to do the work of imagining what a new future and a new community could look like if we begin to produce and build, to produce our kids or our children, to train and develop them that they will have confidence in themselves. How do you do that, Marvin Rome, you ask? I say it's five ways. One is a political agenda. What is our political agenda? How will we affect the politics in our area and the communities that we live and move in and out of? How will we, on a state level or a city level, whether that's in a county or a city or a municipality, wherever you are, and that's nationally, how do we impact national politics to be able to gain ground, to be able to help us devise plans that's going to help us develop our communities, to create jobs for our family members and our children, right? To create opportunities for them that they won't graduate from high school or college not having a path for success. We have to help them create that. Next is the economic agenda. What is the economic agenda that we would use that will continue to thrive and to develop those things that will allow us to sustain ourselves within community, to help us build institutions, to help us develop those places that we most need that are impacted by the lack or the removal of opportunities for our people? A, how do we develop an athletic program that looks at our health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition? You're going to have to take care of your mind and your body. That is your top priority. In order for us to function well in this society, we must have these agendas in place. You have to have a physical plan, a dietary plan, an economic plan, a political plan that speaks to your physical, mental, and emotional health and wealth, because your health is your wealth. Developing relevant cultural programs to really help us look at ourselves and become the best people that we can be. And last but not least, let's look at a comprehensive education that helps our people help themselves. That's the NAAEA. Go out to the website, www.naaea.weebly.com. Become a member and join the team. I'm going over to Brother George. Brother George, are you with us today?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, brother. How you doing?
Okay. I'm doing great. You know I'm up here in the city of brotherly love.
All right. Doing your
yes,
thing.
Sir. Well.
All right.
Well,
it's your time.
Okay. Well, this week's Kwanzaa principle is near, which is purpose, to make our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. And I think that falls right in line with what you were saying a little earlier about us building and putting together a political agenda and making things happen in that way. So I think that falls right in line with now. The Willie Lynch segment today is going to be from Marcus Garvey's book, Message to the People. And it's in a chapter called Intelligence, Education, Universal Knowledge, and How to Get It. You must never stop learning. The world's greatest men and women were people who educated themselves outside of the university with all the knowledge that the university gives. And you have the opportunity of doing the same thing the university student does, read and study. One must never stop reading. Read everything that you can read that is of standard knowledge. Don't waste time reading trashy literature. This is to say, don't pay any attention to the 10-cent novel, Wild West stories, and cheap sentimental books. But where there is a good plot and good story in the form of a novel, read it. It is necessary to read it for the purpose of getting information on human nature. The idea is that personal experience is not enough for a human to get all the useful knowledge of life, because the individual life is too short within itself. So we must feed on the experiences of others. The literature we read should include the biography and autobiography of men and women who have accomplished greatness in their particular line. So he's saying that our experiences alone is really not enough time. You can learn a great deal about life and about human experiences by reading about other people's and appreciating that you don't always have to go through something experiencing. So that's my Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa principle for the day, for the week, brother. And it's back to you, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Brother George. Enjoy your time in the city of brotherly love. Well wishes to the family and continued blessings. All right. Today is education versus indoctrination, our belief. And today I wanted to talk about our belief system, right? And a lot of times we find that as African Americans, our dominant philosophy or religious belief system is Christianity. And a lot of times our people have really knocked Christianity, calling it the white man's religion. But I think today I wanted to dive a little deeper and get some feedback and input from you on what it is that I found in how our ancestors were able to take what it is that they were given. Of course, they didn't come over here without a religion or a belief system, right? So I wanted to speak to how our people were able to adapt, right? I want you to think about how they created the institutions that really founded their own reality. And as you continue to discover how our ancestors were able to take this belief system and morph it into a tool that they could use effectively. So I'm going to go to the clip, and I'll be right back in a minute. Take notes, because this is going to be a really good discussion.
The majority of Africans who arrived on American shores went to their graves believing in, if not practicing, some form of African religion. But resistance to the Christian message began to soften as more black people were born on American soil. In the 1750s, white Baptist and Methodist preachers traveled through the South and parts of New England. They taught Christian brotherhood and spiritual equality and delivered their sermons in a fiery evangelical style that appealed to poor whites and enslaved black people.
What evangelical religion did was give blacks the right to affirm their bodies, because it said that I exist. Society said, you're not even fully human. But in evangelical Christianity, not only am I human, I can shout, I can feel, my body mattered, my hands mattered, my ideas mattered. I felt it. It gave them a religion of feeling. It gave them a religion of physical identification that I think made it more meaningful. It wasn't just doctrine, creeds that you believed in. It was what you felt.
The combination of message and presentation was unlike anything that had come before. Thousands flocked to hear the gospel in what became known as the Great Awakening. For black people in North America, the awakening opened a door through which they first took Jesus as their own and through which they let him take them. Over generations, it would become a powerful and lasting bond.
There was something in the message of Christianity. There was something in the religion of the oppressors that they saw that was deeper than even the oppressors' presentation of that. I mean, for example, the slaves had this saying that there must be another Bible within that Bible.
Black people did not assume the Christianity of their oppressors. The Christianity that black people assume was the Christianity that they created out of the interaction with the Christianity that was presented to them and the Christianity that they re-evaluated and reconfigured to fit their needs.
Charleston, South Carolina. In 1815, the enslaved black population outnumbered the free white population by more than 2-1. On Sunday mornings, black people listened quietly to pro-slavery sermons in the sanctuaries of the city's white churches. On the surface, the Africans seemed to accept these preachments without open confrontation. But on weeknights and Sunday evenings, it was a different story. During slavery, secret meetings served as a place where black women and men could worship God in the way that they saw fit. Their songs recalled stories from the Bible, triumphs of the weak over the mighty. Ceremonially, they traveled through time, casting themselves as God's chosen people of centuries past. At the heart of this experience was the ring shout, the sacred ritual in which worshippers shift their feet and move their bodies in a circle to symbolize the connection between past, present, and future. Over time, the meeting places came to be known as praise houses. The praise house family functioned as the secret religious societies had in Africa. Members were initiated in after months of reporting their dreams and going into the woods at night to seek God. It was a bond that was as strong as the bonds of one's birth family.
These folk worked from sunup to sundown and went to the prayer house and would stay way up until the night hours. it had to be valuable, not just as a time of release, but as a time of community, as a time of being with people who know your everyday burdens and struggles and woes, as a time of being with folk who know what it means to know things ought not be as they are. But this is what we got to deal with, and things are going to change, but we just have to go through this.
During slavery, the Praise House was a place in which black people could nurture their faith that a better day was coming. After slavery, the Praise House remained at the center of people's lives through the 1950s.
When I was a little girl, I used to walk to the Praise House with my grandmother. When we get there, they start the service, and some of the elders, they lead a hymn, and the ladies, they'll sing spirituals.
I think singing is the key that opens the heavenly door. And when they start singing, then...
All right, there you have it. Those are our ancestors. Took what they had, worked with it, created institutions, created song, created dance, took oppression and made it into something that worked for them. So I want you to think about how great our ancestors were and do a comparison to what it is that a lot of us think and feel, not all, about where we are today.
How does Christianity destroy economic advancement for black people? What if there was a day of the week you and some of your closest friends, family, and neighbors got together and proclaimed how insignificant and unimportant that you are? What if, on this same day, they totally embraced how broken, unworthy, and wicked that they are? What if, on this same day, they would shout out the name of a miracle worker that will save them and fix everyone, but never show up? What if, on this same day, they profess that this absent savior, they look like those in charge of a system that squeezed the life out of their ancestors because they were weak, and he is strong.
A black man can steal your stereo, but he can't be your savior.
Sounds crazy, right? Who would do this? What do you think these people's lives and communities would look like? What types of interpersonal relationships would these professed broken individuals have with each other? Would they be trusting or suspicious of each other? Would they uplift each other or see only faults and put each other down? Would they be able to love themselves and those that reflect them, or would they exhibit self-hate and loathing?
Loser, where'd you get the idea you're a loser?
Would they be fearless risk takers, ready to start businesses and build economic freedom within their communities, or just settle and fight each other for the leftover table scraps? The truth is, we don't have to imagine what if. We don't have to imagine what that day is. That day of gathering is on Sunday around the world that black people flock to churches and are mentally programmed to argue for their defects and succumb to the feelings of hopelessness, doubt, and depression, all with the neat and tidy ending of being rewarded when they die. I'm sure when I asked these questions like I did, that the product of this programming would seem obvious in black communities worldwide. But while you're in it, it's not. This is why compassion is such a key moving forward for all of us. According to psychologist Nathaniel Brandon, healthy self-esteem has two components: self-efficacy, which is a basic sense of confidence in the face of life's challenges, and self-respect, which is the sense of being worthy of happiness. But the truth is that every Sunday for hundreds of years, Black people have accepted beliefs that promote low self-esteem, like proclaiming being unworthy.
Worthless anyways.
In the sight of God, that have borne fruit in African-American communities all across America and the African diaspora around the world. These teachings are destroying people and our communities and are at the foundation of interpersonal relationships and communities that cannot sustain themselves economically. Most of those reasons can be categorized under the banner of self-hate. And quiet as it's kept, this programming doesn't magically go away when you denounce the religion. The psychological effects are long-term and must be addressed. Your mind has to be rewired for success. It's because these beliefs put you in a mentality so conflicted that you become your own adversary.
Dude, I'm so confused.
In African spirituality, it's the opposition inner conflict creates. In Christianity, it's the devil or evil or Satan that's at work in your life. In Christianity, these entities are so powerful, even God can't control them. You're basically screwed and just as powerless as God when Satan enters your life from a Christian perspective. But from the ancient African perspective, they are universal laws that you can learn to access and use productively in your life. With African spiritual science, there's an empowering thought process that builds you from within and rewires your mind. What we didn't recognize as Christians was we were participants in our own demise and willingly but unconsciously used psychological tools on ourselves designed to limit self-esteem and individual self-expression. But you didn't know any better because Christianity has been crafting their messages for 2,000 years on millions of people.
The world is sinful.
While in the system, you don't stand a chance against the indoctrination. It's only when you step away and analyze it do you really begin to see it for what it is. In the name of remaining humble in the eyes of God, Christianity taught us to affirm self-loathing and self-hate with ideas like, I'm nothing without God.
I'm nothing without you.
Which at its foundation is an error of the original African teachings. Or another one is God saved a wretch like me. A wretch is defined as a despicable person.
Unworthy of a noble name.
This is a statement of self-hate, loathing, and adversarial to self. It basically becomes a daily negative affirmation for many Christians. But many don't even realize the psychological impact because they accept that they are always at fault and never the religious teachings. It's a psychological loop that keeps you in a state of inner conflict and self-effacing behavior that makes you feel insignificant and unimportant.
Me, I'm nobody. I am nothing.
If you're going to be a nation builder, you must believe you're worthy to be successful and happy in your life.
All right, there we go. Two sides to the coin. Our great ancestors who fought, bled, and died. And now the new philosophy saying that we're indoctrinated to the point where we're confused about who we are. We don't want to build our communities anymore. We don't want to work together. We don't want to come together. But we know that it was our ancestors that worked together. They planned together. They strategized together. So my question today is education versus indoctrination, our beliefs. Are we able to transcend what we believe now to create tools, no matter what you believe in? It's not just Christianity here, but your belief systems to create a reality that functions for you and your family. I'm not saying change anything. I'm saying that they created a roadmap for us that could we possibly have gotten slightly away from? Let's get to the call. It's up to you guys now. And before we get started, as always, here we go. I'm going to 9266. 92266, you're first. You at the top of the day. Marvin Rowan and my brother Stan Macklin in spirit. 9266.
Are you there? I'm on. Can you hear me?
Welcome to the show.
Hey, can you hear me? Okay. Thank you. I just want to make this comment because I remember my mom went to a Bible study. This is like a couple of years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And the guy that was teaching the Bible study told everybody in their room that people are dumb sheep. That's what he called everybody, dumb sheep. And we needed a shepherd to guide us because we were just dumb sheep. And when she told me that, I cringed because, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we're being taught. And they really believe that, you know. And it's sad. And then I saw somebody post something the other day, and we're not just talking about Christianity. I'm going to talk about all religions. I think, to me, and believe me, I believe in God. Don't get me wrong. I believe in a higher power. But I think all religions are meant to brainwash us. They really are. Because I sat up here and I listened to every single religion tell their people that we're the only ones that's going to heaven. And nobody knows that for sure. Nobody has a heaven or hell to put anybody in. And I just, you know, I sit up here and I listen to it. So the Christians said, oh, we're going to heaven. The Jews said, we're the chosen people of God. Muslims said, we're the only ones going to heaven. Hindus probably, you know, everybody else probably feels like they're the only ones going to heaven. So, you know, I think it's just all a brainwash technique that's going on. And it's disheartening. You know, I believe that's why a lot of people are getting away from religion and being more spiritual. You know, I'm seeking my higher power. I'm going to my higher power as opposed to believing in Muhammad, Buddha, Jesus, whoever. You know what I mean? So.
Right.
Those are my thoughts.
Okay. Thank you, sister. I would just like to say that the birth of our religious experience here, let me back up a bit first. Our ancestors brought to this continent with them a faith and a belief system that held them together in the most trying times that any human being could go through on this earth. And it was that foundation that they used Christianity to create something that made them feel good, that made them feel like they mattered, that was meaningful for them, that gave them connection. And like they said in the piece, it was a great awakening for them because they finally felt like they could use what it is that they knew, put it together with what they gave them, and they created praise houses where they would go and worship outside of what they were talking about. So their indoctrination, they would go and listen on Sunday, and then the rest of the week they was doing their own thing. It created a nature of faith and a better way for them through creating the spirituals, through creating these circles, and through initiation of people who were true believers that would be all up all night praying and worshiping. I'm going back to the lines. I just had to say that. I think our people are great. I think we, again, have to create institutions, continue to develop them. I'm not saying throw Christianity away. I'm not saying throw Islam away or Judaism, but practice it to the core of what it is because it can be life-changing, and particularly for people of color who have been marginalized and who have been placed in communities like public housing and really impoverished communities that could begin to once again thrive and produce right where they are. Is my belief system or the community that I live in building people to be productive, positive, and peaceful? Going back to the line, 9282, you're next. My brother, Marvin.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good, my brother. You know you wrong. You know you are wrong.
I ain't wrong.
Throwing this
I ain't
out,
wrong.
You wrong with throwing this out there today,
I,
like you done throwing this out there.
I ain't gonna do it.
You know you seeking a response. You know you're gonna get. First of all, let me say to my family, friends, brothers and sisters, everybody that may be listening or not, that they know I love them. As folks like to say, the bottom of my heart. You know, I will die for all of them. And they know that, you know, all my, you know, family and friends. But damn, I'm not the only one, and I'm glad I'm not. That the brother you played on the tape, the second tape, man, was just, I was like, oh my God, it was like I was saying it, and I was agreeing with everything he said. And can we? And the thing is, I agree with what the sister said. It's all religions, but Christianity gave life to hell. Do you understand what I'm saying? Christianity gave life to hell. Yes, we were religious people when we were brought here, stolen and brought here. And some say 16, 19, others say, you know, 1555, whatever. You know, it's just different stories about when we arrived. But yes, we were Christian, not Christians, but we were righteous, God-living people when we came here. That's one of the reasons why we were not allowed to read or taught how to read for over 100 years. They had to put the fear in us. They had to beat us into submission after suckering us to trap us into this land and then beating us into submission, passing that beating or that self-hatred, that lack of love of self, that fear onto our children, generations and generations, not to the original ones that were over on the ship, that were brought over on the ship, because they never would have given in. They died. We're talking about the products of the kings and queens when they realized they had been tricked by this vicious, evil, wicked man that had suckered them into coming over here. They died for it, for the right. They didn't want to pass that on to their children. Of course, hell to the no. They died. I'm not having no children and bringing them into this. They were forced in, raped. How women were and so forth to produce another generation. And then they started the indoctrination process, whipping and killing, and for over 100 years before we were allowed to read and write. So then when we come after 100 years, now we're going to teach you our language and teach you how to read and write, here comes the Bible. And like the brother said, yes, we're going to put you in a situation where we're going to teach you to hate yourself. You're nothing without God. You're worthless. You're useless. You can't do anything. You need forgiveness. And you're black. You're the scum of the earth. You came about because of a curse. A couple of them in the Bible is how we come into existence. Even to this day when they teach Christianity in colleges, if they show you where black folks come from, we came from curses in the Bible. And we bought into that. And we can't be this, we can't be that. We all use, oh God, please forgive us. It gave life to hell. Something for you to wish for, pray for. In the end of this thing, I'm going to die and I'm going to go to heaven. And Lord, thank you, Jesus, when I get up out of this chain. Praise the Lord. But yet I want to leave my children back here and tell them if they do the right thing, one day they will see me again. Are you kidding me? We need to do, as I've said before, an analysis of ourselves, particularly black men. Brothers, we need to analyze our lives, be honest with ourselves. Go back and see the life that you've lived to get to the point where you are today. See, look at how what we've done in the past truly affect where we are and what we are today. And all we've gone through to help shape us into whatever we have become today. It's our past.
I believe you, brother. I just think, yes, again, sir, that whatever individual believe in, if they make it a useful tool, and my example was that our ancestors took, reformed, reshaped it, reevaluated, and made it work for them in this situation. Now that we're in the 21st century, what are we going to do to continue that thing that helped us to stay together, that thing that helped us to stick together? And this philosophy that they created out of adopting the religion of their oppressor helped them to build community together. So even though we had experienced trauma we were still collective. And these strategies were used well into the 1950s and 60s. So I'm gonna go. Thank you, brother. I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to go to the lines and see what else I can get out here. Thank you, brother. I'm going over to 4692. Brother said I was wrong. 4692, you with me today?
I am. Good afternoon, my brothers and my sisters. Another delightful day in the realm of the unleashed. I thank you for this topic, and I think it is a worthy discussion. I don't know if I have much to add, but I would say this: ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And to the extent that you look at the comparison and the contrasting of the two introductory and opening statements of position on either side, I would have to say that I agree and bend towards the first, that would say that the faith-based, spirit-based, God-centric life of the enslaved African was not given birth to on this soil, that it actually was manifested in us before we came to this country. And to the extent that which the slave masters misused and misinterpreted the written word, whether it be in the Quran or whether it be in the Christian Bible, that does not necessarily, well, it doesn't at all in my book, take away from the truth that can be found. Because I think back to the stories of the so-called chosen people, and to some extent you would think, well, if these are God's chosen people, what in the hell is going on for the rest of us? But the truth of the matter is, even in their heart, the Gentiles knew the truth when they were faced with it. And so whether it came at the end of a whiplash, I'm reminded of seeds that you have to take some time and bury in the soil. And when those seeds die, they give birth to more seeds. So sometimes you have to go through in order to get to where you are called to be. I am in no way accepting of the cruelty and the things that were done to my ancestors. But I will say, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
I like that, sister. And here's the thing for me. This is a safe space, and I think, again, that's a touchy topic for many of us because we don't want to step on toes. But this is all about African-American community and development. And we have a whole lot of different paths and roles that we take in terms of philosophy and belief system. The thing that I'm advocating is there is something to the core that our ancestors who came from different parts of the continent, who were spread out and dispersed and had different language groups, had to figure out how to work together. And what I'm proposing is that we consider looking back at what it is that they had to overcome. And I think in just knocking what it is that we believe to be true could be challenging sometimes. But I think, again, that innately we know what it is that we need to do, no matter what we believe in. But can we come together collectively and set aside our religious differences and perspectives and come up with an agenda and a plan like they did to be able to meet at night and structure and be able to have codes and be able to have conversations without giving away themselves or what they were planning to do because they knew what the consequences would be? We've had our ancestors to go through a whole lot so that we could be here. And I think interwoven in all of that is the secret to community unity. I'm going over to 8128. 81, thank you, sister. 8128. And again, I thank y'all for calling today. 8128. It's your turn. Bring it.
What? How you doing?
What you got? Hey, how you doing, brother?
I have to piggyback off of some of what you just said, brother. What our ancestors, and we have some great examples through our ancestors who did things that today, if you looked at them in today's perspective, may seem miraculous. They did these things with religion, and they did it with song.
Right?
They would sing songs that would be communicating messages to each other and to certain people about things that were getting ready to happen. There are research and documents stating that if a slave on a plantation may have never left that plantation, but knew once he was decided to escape, knew the route to go, because they had means for communicating over hundreds of miles what was going on in another area, another plantation. They had communication systems set up within their Christianity, okay, so that when they meet, they would discuss things. They would know routes, the Underground Railroad, the escape routes. There are documentation showing how religion was used to free our people and to give them a sense of empowerment, not
That's right.
a sense of submission. Okay, religion was not submission for our ancestors. It was a source that we used, that the master gave us, to find ways to liberate ourselves. Okay, one of the greatest rebellion leaders was a preacher. Okay, so there is no way that we can say that the religion, right, what happened afterwards is what the problem seems to be, because the church was a place where you congregated to help the community. It's where if somebody needed some money or somebody needed to build a house, this is where it came from, the church movement. Okay? If we needed food, that's where it came from. We had Sunday dinners in church. You know, we had meeting places in church, not for a sense of oppression and reconciling yourself with a lowly life. No, that was not what it was about. It was about us gaining a sense of unity, collectivism, and support of each other. Okay, it is only after, and I have to say, the decline of the civil rights movement, that the church became docile, passive, and talking about how wretched someone is. Do you know that song "Amazing Grace" was written by a slave owner? A slave owner. We got black people singing it. That's insane. Do your research. You need to also research. Don't just accept Christianity. Right? Don't just accept Islam. Don't just accept Catholicism. Read, study. And I'm not talking about, you know,
that's right, bro.
Talk. Here, I'm talking about research. God gave you a mind to use it, not to accept, not to passively and traditionally accept something passed down to you by someone who may not have read. Okay? Religion was a positive force for us, okay? Because we were not able to use the ones we came here. We used this as a sense of communication, a sense of upliftment, a sense of congregating together and supporting each other as a negative, but as a positive. You just need to read about what your ancestors really did during slavery with that religious thing. When you were singing in the fields, they were talking to each other. They were passing messages. They were talking about somebody getting ready to escape, and we got to cover his back. You know, we got some stuff coming in. We watch out for it at 8 o'clock. You know, it was going on. It was the equivalent to them rapping to somebody about what their situation needed to do.
That's
what
right.
was going on. It was really something miraculous. There are stories of whole families, right, going hundreds of miles to jump and hide on a boat, knowing where to do it, knowing the directions, how, what roads to take, which ones not to take, and never been there. because they had networks of communication that were phenomenal, and the slave master never knew about it, never knew about it, okay? So don't, you know, we have to look at this thing and use our mind and use the ability to research and to understand deeper than what you're told, what you heard, and please don't form your belief based on conjecture, based on what somebody else said. Convince yourself that this is bad or good by you doing the necessary steps of research. Right? It has to be something that is objective and something that has been researched, and then you have to check with your research. You need to understand. And you can't do that unless you study, research, use your mind to make objective opinions and determinations. You know, that I believe, I have to say, and I don't mean no harm to anybody, to tell me you believe in something that you ain't checked out is rather ignorant, okay? You need to have some facts to back up what you're saying if you want to put your life in the hands of something. It just makes sense.
That's true. Thank you, brother.
It just makes sense.
I appreciate you.
All right.
I'm going to try to get back to you in a minute.
Okay.
So I'm going to try to wrap it back around to the top, because there's a point here that I'm weaving in here about a belief system, about what we believe in. And I believe that although we have experienced a lot of indoctrination, our people have managed to navigate extremely well the indoctrination, to create systems, to continue to develop inside of a society that has functioned relatively against us. So I think we have to be able to look for the silver lining in this thing, because they showed us very clearly that they were able to be extremely adaptive. And how will we adapt now, right? How are we being adaptive to put our children and our communities and our families in a position? Here's something else. Look at now how we're using music, right? Or how they're using us to use music. Because music was liberating for us. And again, that's where your gospel come from. That's where your spirituals come from. That's where your jazz come from. That's where your blues come from. And now I'm not knocking rap and or anything like that, but the sound used to inspire us. It used to develop us. It used to nurture us. It used to build us. What is it doing now? How is it influencing and impacting us for the good? And how can we take control of that, or our young people, or the producers who are producing this, to make it relatively good for us? I'm going to go back over to my brother, 9282. How can we use music, for example, as a tool for liberation?
We reflect it in our lyrics, the message that we portray. Yes, sir, the messages that we put in our song, supposedly. Well, when we go back to how our ancestors used Christianity to communicate, and I agree 100% they did, we must understand they didn't believe it, the religion, but they realized how to use it to communicate. As the brother said earlier, that's what they were doing. And they communicated in sound. Because understand, back in those days, we couldn't gather on our porches and our balconies and talk to each other and play cards and have a conversation and exchange knowledge. No, you get killed for that. You get hung for that. The only time we really could to collectively come together was funerals and churches and church services. So the closer back we get to the original slaves that were brought over here, we see these things, and we know they did because they were still fighting the system. You know, so they understood, okay, we can talk like this, so let's do it. Yeah, I remember back in the early 70s, three or more blacks couldn't gather together on a Navy ship because they said we were instigating a riot. So we had to figure out ways to get together and communicate with each other. And this was in the U.S. Navy in the early 70s. So, yes, they didn't believe the religion that they were being taught, but they used it and knew how to communicate with each other because we got to tell each other how we're going to get out of here, how we're going to do things we need to do. But religion was the key element, and it's through time that we gain total control of you, through we indoctrinate you. We know you're going to be rebellious. You're strong people. You kings and queens. This is going to take hundreds of years for us to totally get you in the way we need you to be. But it's through miseducation, bad communication, lying, stealing, cheating, and murdering that eventually we want to get you to that point. And the first thing we got to do is destroy the God in you. For you to be a slave, you can't believe in God or have God other than us. So we kill that in you
They were still enslaved, but they still worship and praise God. Even in their off hours, they went from working all day to praising and worshiping almost all night.
Well,
so
we never stopped praising God.
That the indoctrination was like completely eradicating our capacity to be humans. I think we were very, very creative and very adaptive. And I think that is the mistake that a lot of us make in terms of not really looking at how adaptive our people are and were. You know, one of the people say that our ancestors saw a Bible inside the Bible, right? Again, we're talking about text, context, and subtext, right? How our people were able to deliver one message but had another meaning to it. How do we continue to now move forward? Because I'm asking the question now. How do we move forward navigating now with what we know, right, and having some strategies in this modern era that really help our people to grow? Because we got to come together, because you can't change knocking people down or tearing up what they believe in unless you're going to really give them something better. And I'm not sure if there's anything better on the shelf we can pull from right now.
You just gotta analyze yourself. Like the brother said earlier, you have to be analytical, and it starts with yourself. We've got to be analytical, as the brother mentioned earlier. One brother mentioned earlier that we got to be analytical, and that analysis starts with ourselves. And we have to be honest with ourselves. We got to analyze ourselves. Yes, God is in us. We never lost that. We are a religion. Ourselves as a people, we're a religion. We're what religion is. We define religion because God is in us. That's what we have to rediscover and analyze and find the God in us, the goodness, the greatness. White folks don't want to kill the greatness in us. They want to just kill the mind so they can control the greatness in us, which they've been doing since the plantation. They know we great. That's why they brought us here to begin with. To tap into and control our greatness. We built this world. We built this planet. Yes, the argument ain't whether or not we great or not. The argument is who's going to control our greatness that's in us. Who's controlling the God in us? And right now we are not, because if we were, we'd be like you just said, we'd be together as a people. Because to control the greatness in us and truly become one, we have to unite as a people. That's God. That's religion. Call it whatever you want to call it. Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, Hinduism, whatever. One as a people, one as a nation. That's God when we find the God in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so, sir, my brother.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I just want us to think, right? I just want us to think about the potential that we have, because I think in all that we've gone through, I don't think we've looked into the nooks and crannies of what our ancestors really left us, because I think we have this illusion that all they did was toil and suffer, and in the midst of that, they were very, very creative and extremely effective. And if we could just take a morsel of their ingenuity and their creativity and their survival instincts and apply it to our daily lives and apply it to our communities and rebuild and resurrect ourselves and our institutions, whether it be churches or community organizations or whoever it is at whatever position that we're working in the community. We have to be able to now, and this is a completely African-American conversation. Nobody else is involved. It's us. So I'm talking to us today about thinking about the changes that we need to make on the ground. And what are we going to do and how we can use these tools? And again, I think the more that we continue to knock and stereotype ourselves, the more that we continue to work back. I'm going over to, and I'm about to close out. Don't have a whole lot of people want to talk to me today, so I'm going on back over to 8128. I know it's a tough subject. 8128, what you got for me, brother?
Okay, brother. All right, moving forward, I think that as a community, we all have to realize that we will not be able to achieve any form of independent success or independent growth unless we come together. All right, realizing that, yes, okay, we are a spiritual people, bottom line, okay, and we may have adapted to different religious beliefs, but none of the religious beliefs that you could possibly adapt to in its true form is passivity. None of it means that you don't use your mind, that you don't grow, that you do not come together, and you do not build as a people. Now, in order for us to do that as well, we have to talk to each other. We have to accept each other, and we have to come together. People who what they've claimed, some of our black people moved to the suburbs and moved amongst the more affluent whites and whatever. We have two choices. Either we come together and build, or we move into the enemy's camp and become their token, to become passive to whatever their beliefs and whatever their whims are. Because when you move and isolate yourself in white communities, you lose your power. You lose your individuality, and you become subject and subservient to them. In our communities is the only way that we can build. We need to come back together. Middle class need to come back to their community and start using some of their knowledge to pass on to each other. We used to do that. That was the way we grew. That was the way we got to the point where we are now. Now, there are organizations like your organization, Marvin, that are strictly for us and our growth. There are others that are out there, but we need to come together, okay? Those other organizations need to see the benefit in the unity as opposed to in the separatism, okay? Because we are only strong together. We are powerful. We can only become independent, right? We can only liberate ourselves. Them folks can't do it, won't do it, don't even care about doing it. We know that. We have no alternative but to do what we naturally should be doing. Unifying. Accepting each other like you've accepted the enemy. Accept your brother and you can grow. Accept them and you lose. We all know the truth. That is our only alternative, and they are trying. They're damned to keep us from coming together, which is why we have to build our community, why we have to be creative and use ingenuity that we naturally have. Black people are geniuses when they allow themselves to be. When you use that energy and creative thought, you can do anything. And there's no reason why you shouldn't.
That's right. Thank you, brother.
You can feed your people. Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you. So we wrap it up for today. But I want you to talk to your friends. If you could just sit around and have a conversation about this one, right? Here's the deal. If you don't know where you've been, then you don't know where you're going. It's important for us to know where we've been, the strategies that we use, that we teach them to our young people, and that we continue to develop ourselves. It's up to us to do what we need to do. We have the ability to create our own reality. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.